Okay, we just started. This is Allie. I'm Dr. Dorsey's research assistant for the summer. I just graduated.
And
congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And this is John. I'm a current student that's a research assistant for Dr. Dorsey.
Okay. All right. How can I help you both?
Can we get started with the interview?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, well, to start off with, if you just want to give us a little bit of an overview of your experiences at Swarthmore, I think that'd be a good place for us to start.
That's a while back. So my experiences at Swarthmore. The experience was completely new to me. I had, as a child, as a teenager, grew up on the south side of Chicago, which has a long history, African-American history. No exposure to Quaker traditions or even to that demographic. So the experience was new to me. The educational experience was also new to me because I was much more exposed to, I suppose you'd call it, not conceptual, not analytic learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
So it was throw Ava into the ocean, let's see if she can swim.
Mm-hmm.
So the exposure to African-American, interestingly enough, was also different because the African-American history of the Midwest, the experience, that is to say, particularly Chicago, is way different from the East Coast. New York, New Jersey, and South. I was exposed to basic individuals in history, but not the text, not the literature of the East Coast. There's a lot more, I think, for me anyway, the literature of biography and autobiography was what I was exposed to, as opposed to the literature of sociology or Dubois or Harold Cruz. So it was an interesting experience. I was used to the ideas of African-American organizations because that was the only way that we functioned, through organizations. So that was okay. That was actually the part that I was most familiar with. The part, the expectations of other, I guess, non-black students was something that was also new to me. That was the first time people ever wanted to pat my hair to see what it felt like. And I had never really been exposed to suburban living or people who lived in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I was strictly urban. So I would say that and the academic atmosphere made it an interesting set of years for me. I think I was enriched by it, but there was a lot of kicking and screaming in the process.
Yeah.
I think there are easier ways to expose young students to each other. But it was a politically charged atmosphere. Now I realized later on that most academic atmospheres are politically charged. So, you know, that was nothing that was different. Did I feel like I was mistreated? No. Did I feel like I could have had a better time in the process? Yeah. I think orientation could have been a little bit different. Mainly orientation that week was getting to know where all the buildings were.
Mm-hmm.
Not really getting exposed to the class style. I suppose if I'd have gone to... that was the other thing. I did not go to a high-velocity prep school where I learned to read the primary literature and analyze it in a way that was useful, so that I had to learn how to do that. And the thing that I most notice is that even though I wasn't good at math and science and chemistry, there was much less bias there. I was much more, I think, drawn to it after a certain point. It was the perspectives, even the liberal perspectives in history and sociology, had no room for the voice of the studied group or individual.
Yeah.
And so I was for that reason, I think biology and chemistry were actually easier.
Yeah.
So in terms of mentorship, which I think is really the most important thing in terms of academic development and also focusing on what your path should be, there was none until I met Catherine Morgan. And in terms of medicine, there was none until I met people in the, they had a proposal for a post-bac program, and they brought in people who had graduated but needed another year of exposure to science so that they could move on. And I met these people, and then I saw them as successful. And at that point, that's when I said, I basically did a U-turn. Or I think maybe it was a right turn. At any rate, that mentorship process, I think, is the most important part of the process of learning and education. There are certain ways to break paths, that is, to develop new ideas and to learn new things and to communicate them. And that part needs a model. That part needs a way of thinking about it and a way of going about it. And it's just not clear to somebody coming from where I came from, which is basically Southside. Went to a private parochial high school, but you know, you learn basic stuff. You didn't learn academic process there. So, but once you're able to understand academic process, then you can break your own path and move forward. That's that kind of trust relationship. It should happen more often. I don't know how to make it more often, but it should happen more often.
Yeah.
Does that explain?
Yeah,
that's good.
Okay.
So I guess we want to go from there. You talked about being familiar with black organizations. Were you a member of SAS?
Yes.
And when did you join SAS?
When did I come in? 67.
In 67?
Yeah. September of 67, I think that's when we first had it started having meetings, and I think, I'm not even sure, I think I remember a meeting about an argument about what we were going to call ourselves. But I don't think anybody took minutes for those meetings, so I can't tell you which one it was or whether it well and truly happened.
So you were in it from the beginning of the program, of the group?
I think so.
And do you remember why you decided to join?
You know, I'm not even sure I understand the question, because I suppose the question for me would, why wouldn't I join?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So, the... did I see myself as African American? Yes. Did I feel like I had shared values? Hope so. Wasn't sure, but was certainly willing to find out. We actually were very diverse, very heterogeneous. It was kind of amazing. I mean, suburban, urban, a wide demographic. I mean, at the time, the admissions office, I think the reason we started meeting was because the admissions office had basically done an analysis of who the black students were in hopes that they could further develop the black student population. But they did it in a very, they wrote a paper and said, here, what do you think? As opposed to, you know, having small group meetings and saying, you know, what works for you, what doesn't work for you.
Right.
They looked at it as not student development, but more as what works for the college. So they wrote a paper. Basically, it detailed, there were only about 50 of us, so it pretty much, you could figure out who was who, and you could also figure out what the SAT scores were and all that other stuff. So it wasn't the kind of paper that you share with subjects, but they were doing the best they could. So anyway, that was, and there were all kind of reactions to that. I was like, for me it was knowledge. For everybody else, some people were very offended, and you could look at the paper and say, this is a very wide demographic, and I came to realize that they based it on the basis of schools and SAT scores, and but then as I got to know them, I realized this was a wide different demographic in terms of academic background as well as cultural background. Even at that point, there were still African Americans who were from the Caribbean. African Americans from Harlem, New York, New Jersey are completely different from African Americans from the South Side. African Americans from Florida and Virginia are completely different from Africans from Chicago. And Africans from the Caribbean are different from all of that. There were some students that didn't join. And I was never sure about their motivation.
Were there many of those, or were they pretty few in number?
There were a few.
But they never voiced their reason why they didn't join.
I don't think I ever asked them. I don't think I was at that state. I was a freshman.
Yeah.
And but my background had been from organizations with successful social and political life. So my father was in the Democratic Party in Chicago, particularly the Young Democrats. And so this had been an organization present since the 19th century. I think Chicago had a black congressman either early 1900s or late 19th century, I'm not sure which. But there was some type of black organized political life in Chicago for a while. So that was how I understood organizations. SAS was a lot less structured, but I thought, you know, it would pursue goals that would articulate and speak forward and and also accomplish things that would improve student life and student interests.
Yeah. So what was your involvement with the 1969 takeover of Parish Hall? What do you remember about that?
I was there. I didn't really like it.
What about it did you not like?
I felt as part of an organization it was something I had to do, but I didn't think that, and it was part of the process of, you know, the other student activities that were going on in the region at the time. They weren't going on in the south side of Chicago at the time. We'd already had student life at the University of Chicago. My mother actually went to the University of Chicago, MBA 1948, so she commuted, though. But I felt like it was an important step to do, and we had to be unified.
Yeah.
And the demand seemed reasonable, and at that point, making the requests didn't seem appropriate because we were outside the tradition of Swarthmore thinking and maybe even Quaker thought. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I haven't studied enough philosophy. I know the Quaker meetings that I went to, I was the only black person, so I'm thinking we were probably outside that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember how you felt during the days that y'all were sitting in the admissions office?
Me personally, I was just holding on. It wasn't something that I well and truly wanted to do. I'm not a protest kind of individual. I mean, I will be in granted situations, but if this was a way of me asserting myself and this was the option that I had as opposed to not being a part of that organization, and at that point there only seemed to be two choices, either you're in or you're out,
yeah.
I said, well, okay.
So After President Courtney Smith died, Seth's ended the sit-in, and many students left campus. Did you leave campus at that point?
Yeah, where were we? We were at some church someplace. Were we in Chester or Philadelphia? I don't remember.
What can you remember about the exit from campus?
I think we were in private cars.
Okay.
And then when we got there, accommodations were, I didn't even remember where we slept, probably on the floor, because we were actually sleeping on the floor in the admissions office.
Right. And so did you...
I remember trying to communicate and trying to get people to talk to each other, because on one hand, I thought it was very difficult at that point, because Sam Shepard was the president of the group, and it was almost as though, and I wasn't really a part of the Seven Sisters. It was more like I was trying to mediate between the two, and I felt like I was getting, all right, I'm trying to get along here. And I'm not even sure what the issue was. I think. I was trying to make sense of something that was, I was trying to make something making something coherent of it, like, well, why are we here, and what should we do next? And I don't think that was clear to me, so I think I just took the next semester off.
Yeah.
I came back, and I think I did. I think that was that may have been sophomore or junior year, and then I think I came back. I think I did. When I came back, at some point there were other activities going on.
And then when you came back, we found that there were some documents where you were listed as a treasurer for SAS.
Treasurer? Yeah. I was. Yeah, I just collected membership money and deposited it in an account.
And how long were you in that position?
Maybe a year. I think I may have been on the steering committee at one point. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. I did have a lot of things to say.
And do you remember other members of SAS that were on different committees with you?
Let's see. I remember Harold Trammell, but I don't remember whether he was a part of the steering committee. Don Mizell, Holly Robinson Gillespie, Myra Rose.
As members of the steering committee?
I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
I know Holly was. Mizell was. I'm not sure about the others. There were a lot of disagreements about how to go about things.
What sort of disagreements?
I'm trying to remember what they were. They mainly stand out as conflict. I'm not even sure the issues were all that significant. Oh, yeah, I remember. I remember. At a certain point, a lot of people, you know, had graduated on, and the steering committee had a lot of freshmen on it, and Holly. And and I think Marzell was trying to basically bulldoze people. And I wasn't really sure whether that was for the good of the organization or for the good of Don Mizell.
Yeah.
And I basically said, you know, to Holly, well, why do you want to be involved in this process? Because my conversations with Mizell would be more like, we need to be an organization of people as well as of issues. It's not so much who the leader is, but what about leadership development? And I'm kind of summarizing here. I probably wasn't as articulate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had meetings. There was somebody else who was good. She was a history major. I'm having a hard time remembering her name. Very tough-minded. But I just felt like I spent a lot of time trying to assert interests of group process rather than, you know, individual leadership process. Interestingly
yeah.
enough, a template for organizations in general, but there you are. So yeah, I was treasurer, and then I think I don't think I held any other. I don't think I was ever really a part of the steering committee, although I certainly had things to say.
Did you get the sense that any of those divisions within SAS were along lines of gender in terms of leadership?
Initially, yes, very much. Maryland, we used to call them the Marylands, Marilyn Hollifield and Marilyn Allman.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had very clear ideas of what should happen. More Marilyn Hollifield than, more Marilyn Allman. I listened to Marilyn Allman more than I did Hollifield. Hollifield wasn't around all that much. And people listened to what they had to say. They were fairly coherent. And they were also fairly coherent in meetings, which is probably where I heard most of what they had to say. I remember an interaction between Marilyn Allman and a history professor at a meeting where we were trying to develop Black studies, trying to define it, determine it in terms of focus, in terms of where courses should be. The history professor was saying that many times specific culturally focused coursework or course concentrations didn't survive or didn't have academic focus or weren't well funded, and Marilyn's specific question was, and how does this relate to Black studies?
And so was that the Black Studies Curriculum Committee?
Yeah.
And you were a part of that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I guess, yeah.
And from your experiences on that, did you feel like the faculty members or administrative members that you dealt with treated you as, like, a respectable person or equal that had something good to contribute to the conversation?
That's a loaded question. We sat on different sides of the table, but we had different sets of armamentarium, and we certainly had it was unloaded for us politically, I think, in that we didn't have the budget, we didn't have the perspective on how to integrate African American history into history, integrate Du Bois and the sociology, and so they were respectful in the context of the academic process of funding, hiring, grant proposals, and academic and faculty politics. Yeah, I'd say. The other interesting thing, I was involved in a meeting with the president, I think maybe a provost about the Black Student House, where they basically, and they would call us for meetings, and I'm going, all right, what the fuck's going on now? I didn't quite say that, but I was, their project line of how things should work was not communicated to us at any point in time. And knowing how committees work and how management style work, I'm also sure that wasn't intentional, but it certainly was hard to predict. But I remember being in a meeting where we were basically offered the building, and I'm thinking, this is what I'm sitting here to say, okay? So I said, okay, that'll be fine. With funding for it, and I said, okay, that'll be, yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, students weren't supposed to say thank you, but I nodded my head and was agreeable. Even now, I realize that friendliness and collegiality can often be misconstrued, so I think I was appropriate at the time.
And do you remember other interactions with the faculty regarding getting the Black Cultural Center?
That was the one I remember the most. There was one protest where we went to the house of a later president and somebody read poetry basically saying, you know, we're not happy with what you're doing. And I'm always thinking whenever I go to a protest, and I've been to other protests, this isn't making any sense, but okay, we want to do this, you want to do this, you think it's important, okay.
Yeah.
that president was only there for a year, I think. What's his name? Friend?
Would that have been Robert Cross?
Maybe so. Cross, yeah. Yeah.
And do you remember, you said you were in the meeting where you agreed to the building for the Black Cultural Center. Do you remember why students chose that building or why that building was the one that ended up getting decided on?
Why that building was offered, I have no idea.
Okay.
That was one of those things, like, I wanted to stop and say, wait, where is this coming from?
Uh-huh.
Why are you offering us this? Do we have choices here?
Yeah.
And I said to myself, somebody somewhere knows this, and somebody should have told me. But I realized I was at a meeting, and these meetings were always kind of like, all right, we're going to sit down and talk to you, and we're not going to have any preamble to these discussions.
Yeah.
Or the preamble that we have is more of a principled, conceptual one. It doesn't talk about facts or who's involved or
right.
You know. So I did not ask those key questions, but I also thought, would I get a clear answer if I asked them?
Yeah, certainly.
So I would have liked to have had a contact inside that management process to tell me exactly what was going on. I did not have one.
Yeah. And did you feel that the faculty administration was sort of opaque with all members of SAS? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
And did they, I guess, did you feel that they at any point deferred to the male members of SAS more than the women in SAS?
Only when they wrote the history. The history contained the history of that period that was written. I'm not sure who commissioned it, but there were no women involved in that history. I mean, there were no women mentioned in that history.
Yeah. And that wasn't your experience from being
not
involved?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And going back briefly to you saying you were excluded from a lot of details on the Black Cultural Center, did
mm-hmm.
you ever hear anything about the Michener Fund?
That came through, but I didn't know how it was connected to the... James Michener left them a lot of money, but they decided how to spend it.
The administration did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you have any idea how the fund was to be divided or sort of what
no.
role it was going to play?
No. I never saw that paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess just in general, how do you perceive that your work and SAS shaped your experiences as a student?
I guess the question for me would be, were my work in SAS and my work as a student connected?
Mm.
I'm not sure if they were connected.
Yeah.
I guess additionally, how did you feel that your association with SAS influenced how you were perceived in the greater college community by other students?
Now that I don't know.
Yeah.
The the backgrounds of the other students that I met, people who, you know, came from the suburbs, you know, people who were it was just a really big demographic in terms of people who were learned, rich, well-connected, long traditions of success, you know, familial success. You know, I accepted them from who they were, but they certainly weren't me.
Yeah.
I had long traditions of survival, you know, my mother was the first person in our family to graduate. My grandparents had completed high school, so at a certain point, I didn't pay too much attention to my relationship or my how other people perceived me. I was just more interested in maybe helping somebody else and then trying to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. And to back up a little bit, you were talking earlier about the role that faculty played, and especially when Catherine Morgan came. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your relationships with Black faculty or administrators.
I think there was... There were people in the admissions office. I think the admissions office tried to hire people specifically to recruit Black students. During my sojourn there was the first time they tried to hire Black faculty and administrators. So I tried to have relationships with them.
But Catherine Morgan was the one that you had the most interaction with, or that meant the most to you.
Yeah, it was more of it gave me to understand how research was supposed to work, that you started with primary research and then work your way forward into analysis. And that without the true primary research, I mean, you can do, I mean, I agree, you can do history from documents and from and that's certainly valid and gives you a good perspective and perception, but talking to people and listening to their stories is for me has always been the central way of getting perspective and perception, not just on events but also on how people perceive events. So and from that you can develop models of thinking about it. I think there was one political science professor there, and, you know, I dropped out of his course, like, on day one because he talked in four-line sentences.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, analysis is important, but analysis without background, you know, okay. It's wonderful, it's impressive, but this is not how I learn.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was something you were able to get more in Catherine Morgan's classes?
It was more, yeah. It was something more that, I was able to... I was successful there because it gave me to understand how models are built.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me a feeling of, okay, this is how I understand how this works. And that was really, I think, my first exposure to a real way of looking at methodology, more than just having to memorize models. That was building method.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say, yeah. In terms of other people, basically, I think I graduated in sociology, but I don't think I was ever really a sociologist. Even when I graduated, I honestly have to say I was not well read in sociology. I got a degree.
Yeah. Did you work at all with Asmar Mlegese in that department?
Say again?
Did you work or take any classes with Asmar Mlegese when you were studying sociology?
I don't think, were they there when I was there? I don't think so.
I'm not sure how long he stayed, but he was there for a period, but he was also in anthropology, right? In sociology. So.
Yeah, anthropology, yeah. I think I did take a course with him.
But that was the extent of your relationship with him.
Right.
And you mentioned a couple minutes ago students getting more involved in recruiting more Black students. Is that something that you were involved with at all?
Recruiting? Yeah, I did go on a recruitment trip with one of the administrators there. He told me I wasn't good at it because I didn't smile enough.
Do you remember which administrator that was? Would it have been William Klein by any chance?
I think it was a guy that was only there for a year, but I don't think it was William Klein. Was that C-L-I-N-E?
Yeah.
I'm blanking at names.
That's all right.
I'd do better if I had a picture of him, but...
Yeah.
I don't think he was in the admissions office. Wasn't he like an assistant dean, or was he in admissions?
He was in admissions, not for very long, though.
Okay, then it must have been him. All right.
Another thing that comes to mind with the recruitment was the Black at Swarthmore booklet. Did you have any memories or experiences with that?
Blacks at Swarthmore?
The booklet, the recruitment booklet.
No. I don't think so. I think I may have seen it, but I don't think I was a part of writing it.
And you don't remember other people working on it?
No, I don't remember that.
Okay.
Thank you. Were you involved in other Black organizations such as the Gospel Choir, the Black Dance Troupe, or do you remember what sort of impact they had on college life when they started?
I think the Gospel Choir was just starting as I left.
Yeah.
And that was, I wasn't involved in that. I think the last year I was there, I think I graduated in 72. The last year I was there, I don't think I was involved that much in student life.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the dance troupe. Do you remember that at all?
No, that happened after, I'm pretty sure that happened after I left. I think it did. Maybe it didn't, but I wasn't involved in it.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Were there any other groups similar to those that you remember that we're forgetting?
Staff was enough, I guarantee.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think I did, I mean, in terms of student groups, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. SAS was enough.
Is there anything else that you'd want to add about your time at Swarthmore, particularly your involvement with SAS? Sort of anything we're leaving out?
I think you brought out a lot more than I thought I remembered. So I think I'm done.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
It's been really nice. All right. Thank you.
All right. Best of good luck to both of you.
Yeah, thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thanks for all taking right, the bye time. Bye.